Welcome to episode 16 of the Discovery Files. Today, we're interviewing Rick Strife on his experience during the discovery and exploration at the Midas deposit in Nevada. So Rick, you set the groundwork a little bit in one of our previous episodes. Do you want to talk a little bit more about your time at Midas and kind of what led to some of the discoveries there? And just, yeah, what was your experience around that time?
I arrived at Midas. Newmont merged with Normandy. And as part of that merger, Midas came along in that merger. So Newmont transferred me over to Midas as chief geologist, and I was literally one of the first people on site. And so at that time, Midas was a paper mine. They'd only recently, Normandy, within the last year, had just started a drill program. Until that, it was very old school mining. The miners were using jacklegs, and they were just following the vein, and that was their exploration, was follow the vein. So they'd only recently instituted drilling. And because drilling was an afterthought, a lot of the development was such that there weren't very good drill stations. We started to focus not so much on the center of the vein, which was pretty continuous, but it was really a question of where are the edges of this thing and what do they look like. So we really focused the drilling around the edges. In the meantime, Midas was largely a paper mine. There was some digital, but it was pretty rudimentary. So we had to bring in, we had to update what we were doing to a digital format. The geology was very poorly understood. We would find that on the lower level, they would drift on the left vein, and on the upper level, they'd drive on the right vein, and then they'd stope out between the two and not get any grade and wonder what happened. Well, because you're driving on two different veins and you're mining the wall rock between them. So there were a lot of things that we had to better understand. I brought in a structural geologist, which really helped us with the structure, helped us to begin to predict what the vein was going to do. As I mentioned before, as you looked north at Midas along the vein, and if it disappeared in the face, you knew that it was just to your left somewhere, just beyond the edge of the drift. Those were the simoid loops that John Marma talks about. So we learned a lot about that. Another thing we learned, well, as I mentioned when we were talking about WKP, I'm a big believer in remapping and starting fresh and doing your own mapping and not paying too much attention. I mean, you do pay attention to what other people have mapped, particularly classifying the rocks, but we went and remapped the Midas district. And couple things. One is the previous maps had mapped by formation. So you often had two or three rock types lumped into a formation. Well, you can't see subtle faulting because you can't see the offsets if it's all the same formation. So we mapped by rock type. A big thing, though, that happened during the mapping was that we found that the district was bisected by a fault right in the middle of the district. And the southern half was down thrown about 200 meters. Well, all of the exploration drilling that had been done in the district was in the north half, which is where all the veins are sticking out of the ground and where all the production previously had come from. Well, your boiling horizon is sticking out of the ground. You know, those old timers weren't stupid. They were pretty cagey, right? If there was ore sticking out of the ground, they got it largely, right?
I've always been amazed by how good those prospectors were. Like they would see the most subtle little veinlets and start, you know, like either driving adits on it or just doing little prospect pits. And it's amazing how good they were.
Well, especially when you think, you know, Midas was the early turn of the century, 1900, 1906, 1908. I mean, just to get out there was a major multi-day trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
Much less prospect. So as you say, they're pretty amazing. So, but the northern half of the district, the boiling horizon sticking out of the grounds, more or less what you see is what you get. Well, there must have been 50 drill holes drilled up there with no results. The southern half, which was down dropped 200 meters, that's where the Colorado Grande was, which was the major vein at Midas being mined. You know, Midas ultimately was, you know, not quite 3 million ounces mined. Well, it was all in the southern half. Why? Because the southern half was down dropped and it was buried. And there was no drilling there other than the main deposit, which was somewhat found by accident, really. And so what it immediately told us was we need to shift our focus. We need to be looking in the southern half, in the buried part, where there's a chance of a hidden system at depth somewhere. That was a major eye-opener. And in hindsight, once we identified the fault, it's like, oh, duh, we should have seen this, you know, earlier, because there's a major fault that forms the Midas Trough, the mountain that's, you know, this trough where the mountains on either side are 400 or 500 meters high, points right at Midas. You can project it right to where we mapped. It's like, oh, you know, I can't believe we missed this.
Yeah, and anyway, in hindsight, it seems so obvious. But when you're in the field, you know, usually those faults are like recessively weathered, and they're going to, you know, be really hard to see, except for, as you said, that change in rock type, right? Where it's all of a sudden it's like, oh, this unit disappeared. Where'd it go?
Well, there is a bit of a topo break where this fault is as well. You know, that was a big learning, because that focused our attention, you know, out of the north area and stop drilling holes in the north area where, you know, everything's sticking out of the ground, and focus on the south where the chance of finding the buried systems are greater. And in the end, you know, that proved to be right with the eastern veins and even Green Racer Sinter, that John was, you know, the main driver of both those discoveries. You know, those were in the southern half. So, and there's probably still opportunity in the southern half. But so that was a big learning doing that.
Yeah. And it's tough too, because, you know, 200 meters above the boiling horizon, you know, structures that are going to be big and obvious at depth are often kind of cagey, and they often can be, you know, maybe not barren, but certainly not high grade at surface. And so it's not exactly obvious, right? When you're doing that work, it's, you know, I think a lot of people think that these epithermal fields are like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. And it's, you know, my experience has been, it's much more subtle than you'd expect from how it's described.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometime when you've got lots of spare time on your hands, you can drive up on top of the Colorado Grande vein at Midas, and the old timers trenched along the structure, and you can actually see the structure on surface, and it is very unimpressive, very unimpressive. Yeah. It's just a sheared fault zone. You find these little, you know, half centimeter veinlets of very ugly looking crystalline quartz. You know, you're lucky to get a couple tenths of a gram with, you know, very selective sampling. There's really low geochemistry, almost no gold. And yet 100 meters below those outcrops is a 2 meter wide vein running an ounce per ton.
Yeah. I think I went out there on an interview in like 2006, and whoever was bringing me around took me up there, and we looked at that. And I just remember being so blown away when I went underground and saw the Colorado Grande underground, to be like, this looks nothing like what we just saw. So it's a very cool experience.
And it's very humbling, because you look at that and you go, wow, how many of those have I walked over?
Yeah, yeah. I often think about that kind of thing is, you know, my experience in so many systems is, if you're 100 meters away, it could might as well be another world, right? Where it's so subtle. And if there's brush or anything else, you could so easily miss these mega veins. And it's, yeah. And so, you know, in hindsight, it seems easy, right? It's like always like, oh yeah, you know, there it is. And, you know, look at all the drill results, and it's, you know, like, of course it's there. But when you're looking for it, it's so much harder.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, the same thing at WKP underneath it. It looked very ordinary, half a gram, broken fault zone, couple little scabby veins, nothing. And right above that was, you know, almost 9 meters at 25 in a solid quartz vein. So yeah, it's can be quite humbling to look at something like that and realize, wow, you know, how many of these have I walked over?
So you're chief geologist there. And you know, like, and if I remember right, you know, that's right around the time gold started kind of finally coming back. And so what, when you guys started drilling, what was the feeling at site? Were people starting to get excited with the new phase of drilling that was happening, or what was going on?
Well, early on, we were literally just trying to catch up. We were trying to get the drilling out in front of the development. We were trying to implement systems. I did a lot of hiring of people, you know, and getting the right crew there. So a lot of the early part of Midas was just trying to catch our tail. We did start to step out, and we did have an ongoing exploration program. Almost immediately, the geologist on that drilled into a vein system that was, I forget what his intercept was, it was something like 3 or 4 meters at 20 grams or on the order of that. Pretty exciting. And again, it was in the southern half. It was buried. It was very subtle on the surface. There was just a slight color change in the soil, which was due to the kaolinite clay. And down a couple hundred meters, he gets this intercept. And so that created quite a stir. As we drilled it off, what we found was it was very erratic. It was a big vein system, but it wasn't going to be mineable. It was erratic. But as we began to catch our breath and actually get on top of things, then we started to venture out. And we had an exploration program in the district, as well as, from underground. Early on, I drilled a long hole, probably a 1,500-foot hole, 500-meter hole, out into the hanging wall. And I hit a structure, was, I don't know, a couple meters at 10 grams or something like that. But at the time, you know, we didn't really follow up on it. Well, it turns out that was one of the eastern veins. So,
yeah.
But we never followed up on it. So we left it for John to figure out.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, like, kind of like what you're talking about with WKP too, is you'll often see a lot of good intercepts as you're drilling that, as you kind of follow things up, they seem like one-offs. And my experience has been in some of these systems where you stop getting as excited if it's kind of occasional intercepts. And I've also subsequently realized just how easy it is to miss systems because of the smoke around them and not realize that you're actually getting into something significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another really fun drill hole was, again, in the south by this one exploration geologist. He drilled a hole, and you could see the visible gold in it. I mean, it was really coarse gold.
Yeah.
You know, we sent that off. It was a 7-foot vein. We sent that off, and we had to go to a meeting with our vice president, essentially to present our case for a budget the next year. So the morning of the meeting, we got the results back, and it was 7 feet at 17 ounces per ton. So we walked into this meeting, and everybody's, you know, giving their presentations and stuff. And so they turned to us and go, "Well, what about Midas?" And we said, "Well, we got 7 feet of 17 ounces per ton this morning in an assay. So, you know, we're really busy making a discovery. So, you know, we'll see you guys later."
Yeah. It's like 1200 some odd gram meters, and it's
yeah. And my boss later told me that the vice president was riding back from the meeting, and he goes, "I don't get it. What was the big excitement about the 17 gram intercept?" And my boss goes, no, 17 ounces. And he's like, "Oh my God, 17 ounces?
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, I just realized that's 40, because I think that's 1,243 grams. And so that's 42,000 gram meter intercept, if I did the math right.
Yeah. And again, a buried system in the south.
Yeah.
We did develop some resources out there, but to my knowledge, it's never been mined. You know, it's a relatively small resource, and, you know, for a lot of development. But the geologist that drilled that hole, he had a very odd sense of humor, and he called it the SR vein. I was like, "Well, why'd you call it that?" And he goes, "Well, because there's a smashed rabbit in the road right there." So that was the smashed rabbit vein.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So so we had a number of near discoveries when I was there, but nothing that ever turned into mineable. Now, we did have some veins adjacent to the main vein that we discovered, sort of parallel structures, not real big, but they were close to infrastructure and we could get out there and mine them. So we did expand the resource quite a bit. Another thing that happened early on when I got there was that there was a section of the Colorado Grande vein to the north that had been in reserves, and it was drilled from surface with a RC hole, series of RC holes, and put into reserves. And then the mine geologists before me had come along and drilled it, and they didn't really see any veining or anything, so they took it out of reserves. So we went back in there and drilled it again, and what we found was there was a structure there, a fault, but there was no quartz vein. And the geologists had made the assumption if there's no quartz vein, then there's no point in sampling it. Yeah.
I've run into that a lot over the years where, like, I worked in the Motherlode at one point, and I was looking in this one part of the area where I was projecting a vein to go. And I was like, that's so weird that all of these holes come back dusters. And then, like, I look at it and they never send it out for assay, because they believed that that unit was dead. And so they just didn't assay it. And then I like found core photos, which are like 4x6 core photos, and there's veining in it. And it was like, oh, well, that's really, it would be great to know what that actually ran.
Yeah.
Sample your material. If you,
like, if in doubt,
sampling,
just don't assume, sample, right?
Yeah.
So it was in reserves and it was taken out of reserves and we put it back in reserves.
I bet the resource estimators love that.
Yeah. The other holes were worthless. There were no samples, you know.
Yeah.
So
might as well throw them away at that point. They're more misleading than anything else.
So a learning experience there, right? Don't assume, just sample it, you know?
Yeah. So like, one of the conversations we had at another deposit is often the mine geologists are really the unsung heroes of exploration. And the way I mean that is that, you know, they'll take a vein that's 500,000 ounces, and as they're getting ready to mine it, they'll just continue to be upgrading. And you'll end up with these veins that can add 1 million or 2 million ounces, where it's just through like diligence of the mine geos. And they often don't get the same recognition as exploration teams discovering brand new veins. Is that been your experience as well? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Now, the Checker mine popped into my head because we used to call it the hobby mine. It never had more than a couple years of reserves, and it was always kind of small. And yet that mine ran for 10, 15 years, produced over 1 million ounces because the mine geologists just kept diligently expanding it and drilling more and chasing the mineralization.
Yeah.
A lot of these mines, particularly underground mines, never more have more than a few years of reserves out in front of them. And yet some of them go for, you know, decades.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's always, it's so impressive to see how good teams can continue to find and improve the asset over time so that it just lasts for, I mean, I've worked in a number of mines that had a 5-year mine life for the last 30 years. And then it's been 15 years. And they're still a 5-year mine life, right? But they just keep plugging away at it. And it's something that we need to remember more of, you know, when we're thinking exploration is oftentimes the teams that actually go to mine these things will add just as many, if not more, ounces than the exploration effort does.
Well, and they get to see these deposits in more intimate detail, right? So they often have a very good understanding of the geology. And I can remember one area where I worked in where the exploration team that was doing the near mine exploration around a large open pit had a completely different stratigraphic column than the mine geologist did. And, you know, an open pit is probably the best drill hole you'll ever have, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the exposure of the geology there is fantastic. So why wouldn't you take the learning from that and apply it to, you know, the surrounding area, at least the stratigraphy?
And it's a lot of exploration geologists never venture down into the open pit unless they have like a drill rig turning down at the bottom of it. But like, and I've always found the same thing is like, you know, you can get such a good sense of the structural controls on things, on folding, on all these different aspects that you very rarely see in drilling, and then only occasionally see underground just because of the scope of things. So
Yeah, and you know, you can project those structures and those folds from the known out into the unknown, right?
It's such a satisfying thing to just what you can see from there, and just how much it helps you to piece together the regional picture. But yeah, so what kind of learnings did you take from your experience at Midas as you went on to all these other projects, you know, that we talked about in the last episode a bit, but what stuck with you the most, do you think?
Well, you know, when I came to Midas, I'd already set up a couple of really development projects, K2 and Deep Post, where we started from the beginning and had to build a program. So I was able to take that experience and apply it at Midas, you know. And so from the mining side, it was really kind of honing what I already knew. What really helped me, particularly when I got to New Zealand, was the exploration side. We had a near mine geologist who is an excellent explorationist, and he taught me how to build a pipeline, right? And how to stagger it. So you're drilling projects while you're bringing one up ready to drill, while you're bringing a brand new project in. So as things get drilled and they drop off the pipeline, you've got something to replace it, right? He taught me about being particular about the data. He taught me a lot that really set me up for success in New Zealand, running more grassroots programs. That was a big takeaway. I learned some things, like I said, of really helps to understand the geology, you know, the structural picture, particularly in epithermals, which are so structurally controlled, to have a good handle on the structure. And then also the idea that, just do your own mapping, start fresh, you know, because what came out of it at Midas was this major fault that down-dropped the district and really focused our exploration effort into the more prospective area. So, you know, that was a big one out of the mapping. So that, it was more the exploration side that I really learned quite a bit from this geologist that worked there.
No, that's always, I love those kind of experiences where it's just so eye-opening, right? To be like, you just don't learn that stuff in school. You know, I think the only way you learn it is from someone who's a good mentor, right? And it's just being able to show that is, yeah, that's a wonderful thing to learn. Yeah. Do you have anything else to add on Midas? Or
it was a great deposit to work on, and lots of fun and really interesting, and, you know, really cut my teeth on epithermals there. You know, I'd worked on them before, but that was a real good experience. So, and working with great people. So yeah, no, I'd do it again.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. And then you hired John, and that turned out well. So that's always good too. I sometimes think it's my main contribution to other places I've been is who I hired.
Yeah. Well, you know, that still remains to be, the jury's out with John, but you know, hey, no, John was a good hire. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mountains wide, pickaxe swing, and the earth unfolds, chasing dreams in the dirt and gold. Geology calling under our feet, secrets are buried in the rock and heat, with a heart full of wonder and a map in hand, exploring the treasures of this great land.